always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Also, last thing before we move on and jump back into your guys' questions, but man, that was so fun. Like, that was one of the better series in a little while, in my opinion. Spurs and Thunder was, and I think. The online discourse is the online discourse. I'm not even touching that, but I did love the level of animosity that kind of grew over the course of that series. And I loved how personally San Antonio took that series. And I love, I can't wait to see what OKC's response to losing that series is going to be, both in terms of like organizationally, like what tweaks to the roster are they going to make. One thing that I walked away from the series saying is, I don't want Lu Dort. I'm good. He was unplayable in that series. And against that team, there's not really a use for a Lu Dort, especially if you're not going to put him on Wemby. So, like, I know that, you know, the Thunder are going to be looking to shed salary and stuff like that. And Dort might be one of those guys who they wind up shedding. I'm not really interested in him on the Lakers for a couple of reasons. One, like, you know, from a basketball perspective, I've never trusted his jump shooting. The Lakers are not a team known for turning inconsistent jump shooters into good ones. They're actually kind of known for the opposite. And I don't really, want to stress thinking about Lu Dort forgetting how to shoot when he gets to the Lakers. I also don't want to delete a lot of my tweets that call him a dirty player, that call him a football player and, you know, stuffed into a basketball jersey. I don't want to have to delete all my tweets that call him, you know, a flopper and all of those things. I still feel that way. I hate watching that dude play basketball, and I really don't want to have to watch him play on a nightly basis. But for OKC, like, you know, they, you know, the Spurs are only going to get better next year, right? Castle's going to be better next year. Harper's going to be better next year. Wemby is going to be better next year. You know, and if you're the Thunder, and that team already kind of sort of has your numbers to the extent that they did this year, and you're now going into this moving target that happens to be kind of moving away from you, does your, you know, MO hold up for that matchup moving forward, or do you kind of step outside your comfort zone and maybe trade for a Giannis or something like that? So is Chet on the Thunder next year, given the extent to which Wemby seemed to own him in that series? So it was I can't wait. It was one of those postseason series that, like, as you were watching it, you're like, oh my god, we are watching the NBA as we know it change. And some of that is because Wemby is just that transcendent of a talent. But also, you know, like, we thought that the Thunder was going to be this dynastic presence from here on out. And over the course of the season, they were pretty thoroughly dominated by the Spurs. So, like, that dynasty, that notion of a dynasty with OKC, that's over. Unless they make a significant change, I think, this summer. And if they make a significant change, does that put pressure on other teams around them to keep up in that weapons and in that arms race? I don't know. But for the Lakers, I do think that there's a path here. And the only reason that I see them having a path is because of how much I believe in Luka against Wemby and some of the matchup issues that Luka presents for that Spurs team and that Thunder team too, for that matter. All right, let's see. I am All right, I'm going to go to Twitter. 2 weeks with pay writes, Andre Jackson Jr. as a buy low slash free agent target. Zodiac GMing tells me AJJ, who happens to be a Scorpio, pairs well with Luca, who is a Pisces, and JJ, who is a Cancer. Well, as far as the signs and all that stuff, I have no idea what that is. I'm weird in that, like, some of those calendars have me as a Scorpio. Some of those calendars have me as something altogether different, because my birthday apparently falls on, like, the day that the sign changes or whatever. And because of that, I've just never really understood any of it. Jen's into it sometimes. She likes reading, you know, like how on the nose my Scorpio description can be. But yeah, I don't know anything about the zodiac signs and how that would work out with free agent targets. As far as Andre Jackson Jr. goes, he's somewhat intriguing. I know that, you know, he was somebody who Bucks fans really liked over the course of the year. I like that he is a shooting guard with, like, legit size for that position. Like, you know, he's listed at 6'6" and, you know, plays that shooting guard spot, you know, long, kind of lengthy, athlete. You know, but I, from what I can tell, especially if, like, Giannis leaves, I would probably say that Jackson will be one of their, I wouldn't say, like, cornerstones, moving forward, but I do think he would be somebody that they would want to develop, you know, as they head into this rebuild post Giannis. But if the Lakers can get him, certainly interested in him, he would be pretty far down my priorities list. But, like, you know, to combine this with the previous question, as far as, you know, or a previous question, you know, asking about, like, the buy low, you know, the big swing type approach that the Lakers could be taking here moving forward. I do think there's something to that, you know, and I think Jackson is one of those, not like a huge swing guy, because I think his floor is relatively steady as a 6'6 shooting guard who moves his feet fairly well and has a decent motor. But he would have to be, like, if the Lakers did bring him in, he would be like the fourth or fifth guard. And yeah, like, at this stage of his career, if he's going somewhere to be a free agent, does he want to go somewhere where that would be the case? And he would be going to a Lakers team that would just have paid Austin to the extent that the Lakers are getting ready to pay Austin. The Lakers also are hoping to re-sign Marcus Smart, you know, and if Marcus is back, does, you know, how much of an opportunity will Jackson have? You know, if LeBron is back, is next year the year that Bronny is expected to get, like, actual minutes, you know, and Bronny isn't really a point guard. So he, like, Jackson and Bronny would be kind of competing for minutes. And this doesn't even take into account any kind of potential big swings that the Lakers could make at, you know, that position, who would even further whittle down those minutes. So, yeah, I like the idea. I don't see Milwaukee letting him go for nothing. And if he does go to a different team this summer as a free agent, I think he would be looking for a bigger opportunity than the Lakers can present him. Michael Vigiano writes, what is the path for the Lakers out of what feels like the like upper end mediocrity? Everyone is going to say be patient, but every year with Luka that you write off as waiting to build is a year wasted with a generational player in his prime. Totally agree on that last part. upper end mediocrity. I guess that would be a fair description of where the Lakers kind of find themselves. They're good, but they aren't close to title contention as they were constructed last year. They do have title expectations on them heading into next season. And so like those realities kind of crashing up against each other, that's going to be kind of the defining characteristic of this offseason. How do they navigate their way out of there? To me, I think it features a big swing. I think it features going out and going all in for Giannis, as I've been talking about on the show the last week or so. I think it involves, you know, LeBron coming back and signing a well below market value contract. I think it involves Austin taking somewhat less, even if it doesn't necessarily help you this year. Any amount of money that Austin, you know, signs for, you know, less than the $35 to $40 million a year that, you know, he seems to be pigeonholed for, any amount under that number that he comes in at gives you that much more flexibility, you know, moving forward throughout that contract. The kind of contract that he signs also is going to be important here, right? Like, I would prefer to see it descending in value, but that would be something that, you know, Rob would have to negotiate with Austin about. And I just, you know, it's like, in order to become like a fully fledged, you know, championship contender, I don't think it's going to happen in the one off season. I also think that, you know, the definition of that championship contention is this moving target that, as those Spurs players, like this version of the Spurs, I think next year they'll be pretty much the same, but after that, they're going to have to start losing guys to be able to keep, you know, some of their core together. And, that will help, you know, either bring them back to the pack or keep them closer to the pack than they would have been in like prior CBAs. So that kind of helps. And I think, for the Lakers, you know, it's just, it sucks that we kind of have to look at it this way. I'm not comfortable talking about this, in this manner, but the Lakers over the years, they have like given an extra player option at the back end of contracts to bring somebody in. They, you know, like LeBron gave them a quote unquote discount, but for like, you know, hardly even a haircut, right? Which is saying something given how little hair is on his head. And like this whole like era that the Lakers are kind of moving into, it that the league is kind of moving into, it's really gonna be kind of defined by the guys whose contracts are just crazy enough value. Like I saw Kayson Wallace was asked about the extension that he's eligible for this summer, and you know, that extension I think is going to be super tricky for OKC to navigate, given the extensions they've already given to other guys on that roster. And if Kayson basically says, you know what, I'll take what you can get me, you know, then the league is screwed. You know, then you know, for the more talented team in the league to also be able to keep their guys on below market values, market contracts, like that's an you know, objectively impossible thing to try to overcome without getting some discounts of your own. And that's kind of like the reason I hate this CBA is like, in prior CBAs, maybe spending got out of hand and maybe contenders were so far out ahead of their competition that, you know, dynasties would last a little bit longer and stuff like that. And I guess Adam Silver didn't think that was good for the league. But what that led to was a, like when it came time for guys to get paid, I never found myself like, you know, pocket watching to the extent that I and my peers have had to, you know, in getting ready for this upcoming off season and the off seasons to come. Like it used to be, you know, Austin would have the season that he had and you'd be like, yeah, whatever it takes to sign the guy, like whatever. Or if it was LeBron James, it'd be like, obviously a max contract would really kind of sting given that it would really limit what the Lakers are looking to do this year. But there also wouldn't be so much pressure for it to be like, pay him $1 more than the mid-level, and that would technically be more than the other teams can offer him. I'm not comfortable with the way that we've had to talk about this stuff by way of this CBA. And I know that it's a very selfish reason to not like this CBA, but where it's coming from is I just don't really like messing with other people's money, whether it be players or their agents or their camps or their families and stuff like that. I just don't love doing that particularly much. And we have to do a lot of it because of the CBA. And I think it really sucks. Let's see. The next question that we have here comes from I'm Skim. Oh, let me check the comments. Yeah, cool. All right. Yeah. Like Ka-Ra writes, this CBA is completely neutered free agency. It's not fun anymore. Like it just feel icky, right? Like I'm sitting here, in anticipation of the contract that Austin is, you know, going to negotiate. And I'm like, yeah, if you can, is he really worth 15 times AJ Mitchell's contract next year? I don't know. But I also don't want to talk about it like that way, you know? And like with LeBron, it's like, you know, the Lakers prided themselves on treating guys the best of any team at the end of their careers. But because at the end of LeBron's tenure, you are right in the middle of Luka's prime and the expectations of championship contention that comes with Luka's prime makes it really difficult to treat LeBron the way that he deserves to be treated at the tail end of his career and at the tail end of his time with the Lakers. And I'm made super uncomfortable by all of it because I'm sitting here and I'm like, yeah, it would really help the Lakers if he took $15 million next year. But I'm also sitting here saying like, why the fuck should LeBron James, who just helped win the Lakers a playoff series without Luka, without Austin in this year's playoffs, why the hell should he be making $15 million next year while Austin Reeves is getting ready to make 35 or more? Like, what kind of sense does that make? You know, and what it winds up being is you wind up hit, like Rui's contract is coming up here too, right? And I'm like, it would really be nice to be able to keep Rui, but if you keep Rui at like, you know, that $17 to $20 million a year range that he's in, then you're just running it back. And I definitely don't want to run it back. And I say that as somebody who like really likes the amount of growth that I've watched from Rui over the years. So it's just this really awkward spot that this CBA has put everybody. And I know, like, you know, me sitting here whining about my job is not something that anybody is interested in hearing. It just, this part of it just makes me feel really shitty. Like this part of it just, ugh, I don't like it. But anyway, let's dive on in. Let's keep this thing rolling. I'm Scam 105 writes, hi, Anthony. Have you heard any Giannis updates on the Lakers end? In February, you shared that the Lakers felt they had a good shot then. They did, and they do. That remains the same for the most part. I haven't sensed any like change in their stance, and that now would lead them to believe that they don't have a shot at Wemby any longer. I think that the market on Wemby is in a place where a lot of teams are convincing themselves that maybe it makes sense for them to go get him. Like I saw Chris Haynes the other day report that Portland is apparently kicking the tires on, you know, maybe just maybe does it make sense to bring Giannis to Portland, even if he does not want to go to Portland, right? I saw Windhorst talking about Giannis to Cleveland, right? Because of Cleveland's disappointing postseason. And what is happening is at a time where teams are, you know, have become a lot more reluctant to trade picks far out into the future. And given the amount of wishy-washiness that we have seen from Giannis over the years on will he demand a trade? Will he not demand a trade? Does he want out? Does he want here? Does he want to be on the East Coast? Does he care about where he is? Does he care most about competing for a championship? Does he care most about, you know, the spot that he and his family happen to be in? Like, with the amount of ambiguity surrounding all of this, and as we jump into your or advance, you know, further into our time with this CBA, and now with these anti-tanking measures in place, like, Giannis's price has dipped quite a bit, you know, and or at least the perceived price of Giannis has dipped far enough that, you know, enough, I think more teams are now interested in it, which will bring the price back up. So that's, you know, that's this like seesaw thing that we're going to be, we're going to be watching on this front.